Hello and welcome to another episode of Let Me Finish with myself, Thomas Zacchio, where each time I'm joined by a very special guest to chat about a topic that we get so passionate about that there's no choice but to let us finish. The idea of this podcast is to document some of the interesting, inspiring, and funny conversations I've had with people I've met so that I can share them with you. I hope you have as much fun listening to this as I did recording it. That's a nice, easy segue into part two. So part two of this, the podcast, we tried to, and it's to a certain extent, I think if you listen to the first part and try to manage to follow the context of like all our little detours and sidebars and all those, that like, yeah, we were kind of just kind of setting up talking about like misinformation how we've kind of got to this place. The second part is more about like the in a way the consequences of them.
Yeah.
And the last, we're just going to focus the last bit towards the end of kind of what you can do in order to kind of identify kind of misinformation and not be as susceptible to it. And yeah, just to reiterate, misinformation being information that is inaccurate but not necessarily with the intention of it, as opposed to disinformation. So I think, yeah, so for instance, obviously something like the vaccines and the COVID rates and how that's being measured and the deaths and all that kind of stuff, a lot of murky waters. I don't know about you, but I think like I obviously got my head around like the vaccines in terms of how they're measuring like the number of deaths. I think obviously that kind of stuff changes. So that just creates a lot of space for misinformation. Yes. And I don't know if you've had a similar experience.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely have one thing that just reminded me what you said. A lot of people, for example, I mean, I think we spoke about this before, about how people interpret statistics where do I start? So I guess probably, but I think the one thing that what you said reminded me was someone on my Instagram who went to my high school, she's very like COVID isn't a big deal, the vaccines are controlling, and like, I don't know if she's necessarily a chip person, but she's definitely against, I don't know if she's anti.
Is there a term for chip? You call them chippers?
She's not a chipper.
She's a chipper.
I don't know if she's anti-vax or if she's just anti-COVID vax, either way. She's anti-COVID, basically.
Anti-COVID, right, yeah.
I mean, we're all anti-COVID, but she's, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's not do that, but she looks at the statistics of COVID deaths from a global point of view. And I think the issue with that is that the death rates or mortality rates, when you look at it globally, you are missing some very, very fundamental things that are going to influence that death rate. So,
yeah,
you know, we're talking something like, you know, our diet, our lifestyle, you know, leadership. I'm trying to think of what else.
Population density.
Yeah, population density, you know, even like things like belief systems or religion, that's going to play a role. To sort of look at it from a global point of view, you are completely missing out all of these different sort of variables or, you know, things that need to be accounted for. You know, also things like healthcare as well. I mean, if healthcare isn't up to scratch, if you don't have enough ICU units, if you're not prepared, then one country that might be developed or more developed than another country might still sort of fare worse with COVID than another country that maybe isn't. So, you know, we see in a lot of also culture, you've got a collectivistic culture, individualistic culture. So how much people are going to conform to wearing masks and social distancing. So when you look at the from a global point of view, deaths are so low. I don't know. I mean, she was sharing things like 99%. I don't know if it's 99%, but, you know, again, whatever. Even if it was 99%.
99% what? Like recovery rate?
Recovery rate, yeah. I don't know if that's the right statistic. I'm not going to you know, agree or disagree. Misquote,
disinformation.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to spread disinformation. But I mean, firstly, yes, 99% recovery. Let's say that that is the right sort of the right percentage. We have 7.5 billion people on Earth. 1% deaths is not 20 people. That's millions of people. Like, it's, again, when we look at, when we think of 1%, we think, oh, tiny amount of people, not a big deal.
Yeah.
But when we look at 1% of 7.5 billion, slightly different story. That's a bunch of people dead. That's a bunch of families and friends devastated. That's a lot of the healthcare system failing. That's a lot of, you know, doctor and nurse PTSD that we're going to have to deal with. It's a collapse of the economy. It's not just, we're not just talking COVID on its own. We're talking about the impacts it has more widely. And again, like I said, looking at that stat from a global point of view is not helpful. However, it is helpful when you don't believe that COVID is serious. So it's one of those things, again, the whole confirmation bias. Maybe it would be good to define confirmation bias.
Yeah, go on.
Confirmation bias is, you know, looking for things that confirm your existing beliefs. So you think that COVID isn't real, or that it's not as bad as people make it out to be. So you go and you seek information or interpret information in a way that confirms these sorts of beliefs. And we all do it with different things. And sometimes it's going to be dangerous. Other times it's not. In this case, it is dangerous because you've got people who aren't caring about something that is actually a big deal. And that COVID itself isn't killing people through COVID. You know, whatever else you can think of, it stems everywhere. But, you know, that reminds me of this other, another person who said that he went to, I told you about this last week, you're going to laugh when I say it again, but another person who went to hospital for unrelated reasons.
Oh, yeah.
COVID. And he said, you know, the hospitals were saying that they're full and I just went to the hospital and it was empty. So trying to imply that it was, you know, something fishy is going on here. And it, you know, or like, you know, it's concerning that the hospitals are empty, but they said that they're full. When they say that they're full, did you think that there would be COVID patients in the reception area? Or do you think maybe highly infectious people wouldn't be anywhere near someone who doesn't have COVID in hospital? And, you know, you're right, it is concerning, but it's not concerning because they're lying. It's concerning because there should be people in hospital. There should be people who are getting treatment for whatever they need treatment for, or who need to be getting diagnosed for whatever they need to be diagnosed for, and they're not because they're scared to go to hospital. So looking at it from that point of view wouldn't confirm that existing belief of yours that we're being lied to. And so you've decided to interpret an empty hospital as they're lying, they're not full. But there's only somewhere that you can put these COVID patients, and that area is full. So I went on a bit of a tangent there, but
no, that's that makes sense. That's absolutely fine. I've got a couple of notes and kind of comments. I was letting you finish. Very, very aptly named. Yeah, let me finish. So yeah, no, I think the anti-COVID element is everyone's anti-COVID. Like we are tired. we're tired. We want to go outside. Like we all, like, I think this is the thing. It's like there's this concept that people are, oh no, I just love lockdown. I just kind of want to stay inside. Like, and just keep doing, like, yo, everybody wants to get out. Like, I don't think there's
the introverts. Yeah,
right. Even the introverts. Like, I just need to go to a club or something, just like, just, I don't know, just stand in the corner for a bit and then bounce. But I think, like, no one likes it. Like, I get that. And like, and you have no choice but to sympathize sometimes, because you understand. Like, I think you're fed up. I think that their mental health implications, like my mental health has been a fucking roller coaster. Like some days I'm like, yo dude, like this lockdown thing is cool. Like I finish work, I'm like straight onto the sofa. I don't have to commute. I'm like playing PlayStation. Like I'm reading, like managing to read books. Like I'm really enjoying chilling. And then other days I'm just like in a fucking hole, like just refreshing my inbox. Like I'd work for 4 hours and just not doing anything at all. Cause like it's so many highs and lows. So I think obviously those impacts. And then I think we also have to be kind of self-aware in terms of like the privileges that we have, for instance, us being in, at least on the working side, that our jobs are secure and the types of jobs that we can do from home as well. So like our income's not impacted at all. Whereas there are a lot of, definitely predominantly, like I say, working class people as well, who are significantly impacted in terms of like the work that they can do and like their income and stuff and everything as well. And obviously that has knock-on effects in terms of their financial status and subsequently their mental health as well and their stresses. And that feeds into like health implications as well, physical health implications. And then they can't go to the hospital because they're like, well, I mean, there's a whole panini going on. So I think you have to be kind of conscious of this. You can't just kind of sit down and go like, oh, cool, I'm just going to sit and like order shit off Amazon and Deliveroo until like this is done. Yeah. So, so I think everyone kind of just wants to like get back out. And like, it's a shame that it's kind of come to this, but like we're in this situation, but we just kind of have to just keep pushing through really. Yeah. And it is really distressing for people. And I think that's a hotbed for misinformation. Cause then you're like, well, I need answers now. So I need to go out and understand exactly what's going on. Cause the way the media is being portrayed, like portraying a lot of these things, I'm getting such conflicting messages that and it's all about like, yeah, let's get a balanced perspective on kind of things. And you're like, there's balance of opinion and there's balance of like science. And but like obviously there's a solid methodology to ensure that people agree on that across the board. And I think I can't remember which outlet have done it, perhaps the BBC, but they've stopped inviting kind of climate change deniers on, because you're like, listen, that we're not like, this is just objectively incorrect. Like we're not going to give you airtime. This is not a change of opinion. This is, you're just like scientifically incorrect. There's no point giving you the airtime, which I think goes into like a very, like we said earlier, in terms of the censoring and selecting who gets a platform and like the impacts of free speech. And then going, well, these people don't, like, you can't give these people a platform because it's just like they're just misinforming people. And yeah, I think like especially when it comes to say misinformation or susceptibility to believing conspiracy theories, which in that book of the psychology of conspiracy theories, there's a pretty high correlation in terms of people having quite traumatic experiences and then needing answers and then subsequently looking for answers and like you said, the confirmation bias. It's not strictly like that, but like that's the kind of the gist of it. And like this lockdown is a really traumatic experience for a lot of people. So for them to go around and say, well, I need answers, this information over here aligns with what I believe in, so therefore I'm going to like really like dig my heels in into this. And it goes into what we're saying in terms of people starting with a conclusion and then working towards, so the confirmation bias and working backwards, as opposed to starting with a hypothesis and working towards a conclusion. So, which I think we're all guilty for to a certain extent, but I think that there are wider implications of those.
You're absolutely right. I completely agree with you. And that thing that you said about, I mean, we both watched it. I can't remember if you sent it to me or if I sent it to you. The flat earthers,
Jubilee YouTube page, and they've got that series called Middle Ground. Yeah.
Yeah, although they don't tend to come to a middle ground ever.
Yes, not really.
But so it reminded me when you said, you know, from what you read about in your the Psychology of Conspiracy Theories book about sometimes people go through traumatic experiences. And one of the women so to give context to anyone who's watching, so you've got, there was a group of flat earthers, three people who were flat earthers and three scientists. I don't know if they, well, yeah, I mean, three scientists obviously have a lot of knowledge about that particular topic.
They were like,
there's nothing about
it. They were like astrophysicists and so on.
Yeah. They were answering certain questions, or giving their opinions about why they thought the Earth was flat, why they didn't think the Earth is flat. And one woman was saying that she wanted to be an astronaut. She was a flat earther. She said that she wanted to be an astronaut when she was younger, and she was super into science, you know, like really big on it and things like that. And then her husband one day told her, "Did you know that the Earth is flat?" And she didn't believe him. And then he got killed. I don't know what happened that she didn't say, but he got killed. And after that, she started to look into, you know, this whole flat earth sort of theory, conspiracy theory and everything. And she ended up getting hooked on it. And now she considers herself a flat earther. And it's, you know, you realize that potentially for someone to go from being super into science to from wanting to be an astronaut. So we're not talking about a scientist in sort of any sort of field. We're talking specifically... Yeah. Someone who is looking, we're talking about planets. to go from that to being a flat earther, I mean, you do have to have a bit of compassion, because in a way, potentially, she didn't say that, but you do start to think, well, is she trying to keep her husband's legacy alive, or in some way keep him alive spiritually, whatever, through believing in this theory? Because if this theory is debunked, then I lose that very last thing, that only thing that is left of my husband that I can keep alive. And so, like you said, you've got to have compassion for people sometimes too, because they might have, you know, a lot of people become more religious after they go through bereavement, because, you know, you get told there's an afterlife, or they're here with you spiritually, whatever. And it's a coping mechanism. It's just, the issue is when you then start to, you know, people who say don't believe that COVID is that serious, they start to storm hospitals and go into hospitals to see, to prove that it's not full or whatever. And that, I think that's where that line, there's sort of a line, and when you go over it, that's when, it's not that we can't feel sorry for you, we still have compassion for you, but you are royally ruining other people's lives. just, if you want to believe that, fine, but like, relax, please. Stop, like, I mean, please, I don't know why I'm saying please, like they're gonna listen to this.
I'm begging you.
Sorry, Andrea, we'll stop. But
you know what, she had a really good point, and now that I hadn't considered it that way, but now that I've listened to this one podcast from this random guy in East London, who just sends it to his cousins and his friends, got a real point. That was the turning point.
I'm going back to wanting to be an astronaut now.
Exactly. Inspirational, out of this world.
But you know, like you said, it's about, I suppose, again, what I said in the previous episode about don't go in all guns blazing. Some people have a reason why they believe what they believe.
Yep.
And if you threaten their identity, and this is, we're going into identity theory now, but when you threaten someone's identity, and you threaten it in a way that's like, you've gone in and you want to, you know, cause chaos, you know.
Mm-hmm. You woke up and chose violence.
Exactly. You don't, when you come in and you're just like, you know, you're wrong, what you think is completely wrong, no one's going to actually change their opinion. They're just going to think even more strongly about their opinion. They're going to identify with what they've been identifying with even more. And they're going to perceive you, their out-group,
as a threat,
as someone who is actually basically a piece of shit. And basically everything I thought about you is true. If anything, it's even worse. And now I'm never going to speak to someone on the other side, and we're never going to actually have a conversation. We're never going to explore one another's beliefs, but respectfully. And capital riot, here we go.
Long story short, that's so true. And I think it's so much easier to be angry, and it takes a lot for you to override that, like, initial response of anger and going on the defensive. And it's a lot harder to just be kinder, and just kind of show that compassion, which is what it really kind of boils down to. So, like, what I was saying in the previous episode, in terms of how you're either lying or you're stupid. I think as soon as, like, you put that label of stupid, then someone's like, well, now this person's an idiot. Like, you've attacked that, like you said, identity. And, like, as soon as you go for this person's kind of sense of self and you challenge that, you, for them, you are now a threat. And because no one's going to go around like, yeah, you know what, I am an idiot. You random person in the incident, you made a very valid point. Like, it doesn't work that way around. So yeah, I think showing the compassion is important. And like, I think you need to override a lot of like initial rumor, and it's tiring. Like, it's exhausting to always kind of get, like, do that. And I think kind of goes on to being woke and like the PC culture, right? And I think that, I mean, my personal like interpretation was like, this all kind of started like with good intentions of being more compassionate to people. Like, political correctness is like, yo guys, a lot of stuff we're saying kind of outdated, kind of like stems in like very kind of harmful and derogatory terms. Why do we be kinder to these people and think of other, like, other ways around it? And I think that's kind of started well. But I think we mentioned the other day that like with a lot of these initiatives, there are people on the extremes that obviously take it quite far. And now you're suddenly associated with this entire group, and this goes both ways. I think you're like, say, we're both like left leaning if you had to kind of place us on like the political spectrum. But there are people like on the far left, and you're like, that they're fucking insane. But then obviously we don't want to be associated with them, but then so like often people, we would do the same to the right. So there are people like on the extreme right, like the ones who just like say extreme right, but then people like more moderate on the right, where you actually have a lot of crossover with what you believe in, and like you want the same things, you probably have different methods of getting to those points, but like you focus on the extremes. Like, that's why we say like conservatives / all Trump supporters, like the extreme ones. And you just like, you just group all of these people together. So you don't allow for that nuance. And you just focus on like these lot that are like on the extreme side, and you think they represent the majority when in fact it's unlikely, but these are the ones that get all the headlines. And you're just like, then you're spending so much time putting out fires in terms of like, now like every day I need to wake up and then explain to people that, yeah, we're not like canceling Dr. Seuss or like Mr. Potato Head or whatever happened in the last kind of like 2 weeks. And you're like, it's no one's asking for that. It's not that deep. You were just like, perhaps something was interpreted in a particular way. The headline was like clickbaity. And now I have to go and defend that, even though like, I didn't think I was going to wake up and I have to explain something like that this morning. So talking about what you mentioned previously in terms of pseudo activism as well, which I thought was really interesting. Do you want to kind of just define that and like intro it a bit?
Yeah, so I've just called it pseudo activism. This isn't like an actual
copyright.
Yeah, I've just decided to make that up, but I looked it up, I googled it to see if I was the only one who's ever said pseudo activism, and there's very similar sort of words that other people have used that essentially are saying the same thing. But basically it's, you know, people who, especially on social media, it's kind of like, when I repost something, that's all I need to do. And that's my sort of contribution here. That's my sort of activism here. And I think the other thing, I suppose, again, linking back to what we said before about sort of attacking people for having slightly different opinions. I'm not talking about you have to listen to someone who's in the KKK. That's a bit, you know.
Yeah, it's not everybody. Isn't it like the is it Carl Jung? The paradox of like tolerance. Mm-hmm. Have you heard about the paradox of tolerance?
No, I haven't. I've heard of him.
Is it Carl Jung? Oh, Karl Popper. Sorry, drama beef. But
disinformation.
Right. Exactly. No, but it's more about, in order to have a tolerant society, there needs to be an element of intolerance, but towards like ideas that you will not support. Yes. So, and it's, yeah. So for instance, if you're like tolerant, yeah, like let's listen to everybody's opinion. And now like we have to sit down and listen to fucking everyone. And it's like, and then like the thing is like with these kind of logical fallacies and things, or like you get someone charismatic coming through and like making what like on the surface sounds like really good points, but as soon as you strip it back, as soon as you start like testing it, it falls like through, but like it's too late because it's headline fodder, it's like clickbait, like goldmine. But by then, because you've given this person the platform, that has spread, so you've kind of like opened Pandora's box in an extent, and now you're like, well, we listen to everyone's opinion, but and we were tolerant of everyone's opinion, but now we need to kind of like where do we draw the line, because now they're having like real world implications of them. So but yeah, that was just your point of like, oh yeah, let's listen to the KKK, maybe they've got some like points. And you're like, yeah, I mean, like, yes and no, like, yeah. As in like you can see where they're coming from and then like break it down from there, but like not the end point. We don't go from the end point and be like, well, I think, you're like
so yeah,
let's engage in debate.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a big difference between explaining and justifying. You know, you can explain why someone is
maybe
a serial rapist, for example. You can explain that if they have had a troubled childhood, or they were raped in the past, or maybe their parents raped them. You know, that's something that's actually quite common, at least from the true crime that I watched. Mm-hmm. I suppose that's a good link with pseudo-activism, is if someone explains this person was abused in the past as a child and they model those behaviors themselves when they're older, and we can explain it, someone who is, I think in this case I could probably use someone who's far left, might come in and attack me or whoever's doing the explaining and be like, so what you're saying is that it's okay that they did that, and relax, no one's justifying these behaviors, they're just saying this might be why. And if we can explain why, then what we can do is we can intervene, and we can then take preventative measures. So maybe we can take measures where we protect kids more, where, you know, a lot of people who went into foster care were abused by their foster parents. So maybe we can change the system, the foster care system, and impose more rules, regulations, checkups. And by being able to explain that end result, which is awful, we can use that as an example to say, something needs to change, but we are absolutely not justifying. But what can we learn from this? You know, a lot of the time it's because the system failed them. And the whole pseudo-activism thing would be to say something like, you know, for someone to claim that they're this activist who's proactive, but in reality, you're just trying to start an argument. You know, that's not benefiting anyone. Allowing someone to speak, allowing someone to explain something, you're deliberately interpreting wrong, because you want to say your bit, but not just say it, you want to shout it.
Mm. You're listening to respond, not listening to understand.
Oh yeah, that's a really good way of putting it, actually.
That ties it back into the topic of this podcast again, of the misinformation, because like I appreciate we obviously go on massive tangents, but have to tie it back just to be like, this is why we brought it up. It's absolutely, because I think obviously all that stuff we talk about is perpetuated by the like the media that we consume and like the information that gets shared out, because like something like this will happen and articles upon articles will be written about it, opinion pieces, or like, this is like why you should be mad about this, or this is why the other side are being like hysterical about this for no reason. And it's being able to not get like swept up in all the like media hysteria and managing to take a step back if you possibly can. I mean, I sometimes need to, and I am guilty of getting like of diving in and just on Twitter perhaps I don't tweet as much. I'm more of like a like and a retweet kind of guy, but then on Instagram I think I'll share things that for me resonate the most, so I feel like have the most constructive narrative. So as opposed to, I feel that a lot of things such as the why are we not talking about X kind of thing, I find that quite exhausting. I'm like, it's impossible to like be aware of everything that's going on around the world, like all the like inhumane things going around the world, because there are loads of them. Be well informed of those, understand the context in which they're happening, have an opinion on them. I think, why do we need to, like, people are just expected to have an opinion on absolutely everything, where it should be like, we need to create the space to be like, I don't know enough about this to have an opinion. And I feel that is with a lot of like information being like bombarded at you, it's really overwhelming and hard to process. So as a like heuristic tactic or just like a shortcut, you're like, let me see what people who I normally agree with are saying, and then I will pick that side and just kind of go with them. And which like is understandable because it's difficult to do and it requires a lot, and especially if it's happening every single day. And this is just like, we're not even factoring what the rest of your day was like you have a job, you have like your own personal like experiences and everything. It's like your day isn't just on whatever like the social media is mad about today.
So
I mean it's tough. So I think there's I really like what you said in terms of allowing people to kind of have that conversation and come into that like that space in a way, because I think even if you don't agree, what doesn't happen anymore is people agreeing to disagree.
Yeah, you have to agree or disagree.
You have to agree or disagree, and you can't just concede. You have to be defeated. This is what like social media and like a lot of YouTube videos are about, like, this person owns liberal on this, or this guy like owns right wing like fascist on this. And you're like, it's just everyday drama. Like now every conversation we have is a debate. Yeah. And taking into consideration that like we are not skilled debaters, we are not trained in debating. And just last point on this, for me is like, I feel James O'Brien, who's a radio host here in the UK, has it's a phone in radio channel. So people call in and then he will kind of talk to them about like topical issues. And in a way, I think he's quite blunt, but like, and obviously for the sake of viewership and content creation and kind of clicks and advertising money, they obviously want the most like dramatic stuff. So it's very much feeds into this like clickbait, like rage kind of stuff. But one thing he said, I read his book over Christmas, and he doesn't blame the people themselves. Because you do have like some obviously power in terms of like the content that you engage with, but if you kind of he blames the like the media owners and the people like in the powerful positions like shoving this information and this agenda and propaganda down these people's throats. And like, I mean, people like these people who know a lot more in terms of like the psychology of like influence and persuasion and like building this narrative and social and political tactics. So, and they're applying this on like your just everyday person who wouldn't necessarily be inoculated in terms of like knowing what's going on. So I think there's, to an extent, like, yeah, we do need to, people need to be responsible for like the content, like the content that they read, but also you need to hold the people who provide the content accountable as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that links a little bit as well to the whole call out culture, where people use accountability to cyberbully. It would be like, you know, there's a difference between holding people accountable and then telling them to go kill themselves. So I think it's
right.
And again, you know, it's, and I'm not even like you said, like we're more left leaning, but I know I keep talking about the far left, but I think it's just because it's not spoken about enough, you know, because I think our vision of the far right is like, we always just think about Trump, you know, or like we immediately think about like Republicans, for example.
Or like EDL and
And I think, I mean, there was a, you know, one thing that people maybe don't even know is that there was a whole Republican, like a group of Republicans who were against Trump, who wanted him out of office. So, you know, what now? what do you do? But yeah, like you said about the sort of accountability, we need to hold people accountable. And if you are someone who was telling people like, you need to hold Trump accountable, people who are far left, and now they aren't holding Biden accountable for bombing Syria, then you're just as bad, right?
100%.
So it's, if you want to talk about accountability, then just hold people accountable. not just, you know, or it's like, you know, this is the other thing I was telling you, like another girl who I have on my Instagram, she was saying, if you're a Tory, block me on her Instagram. And I was just thinking, you know, because she's constantly just like, everyone who's a Tory must be X, Y, and Z. Everyone who voted for Brexit must hate immigrants. I know people who voted for Brexit who now say, I wish I didn't, because I feel like I was lied to. And it wasn't because it wasn't because they hate immigrants, because then we wouldn't exactly be getting along very well. but we have very similar opinions. And I have friends who voted for Conservatives and we have very similar opinions. So you to say block, you know, if you're a Tory, block me. What are you actually saying? Like, I don't want to hear anything from anyone else's opinion. Or another girl who said, you know, if you clap for the NHS, but you voted for Tories, then you've got blood on your hands. Like, were people supposed to predict that the pandemic was going to happen and they could deal with it perfectly, like really badly? And also, on the other hand, are you certain that if it was another sort of party leader sort of taking the stand for what's going on now, that they would deal with this perfectly? I mean, you know, it's what an assumption to make. Yes, they've dealt with it awfully. I don't think the Conservative or like Boris Johnson has dealt with this well at all. But I can't sit here and say that someone like Jeremy Corbyn would have dealt with it better, because I don't know. So, yeah, it's just about, the whole accountability thing. You know, don't pick and choose who you hold accountable. There was an, I don't know if you know who this actress is, but she played Villanelle. Do you know who it is?
Jodie Comer.
I don't know if it's her, but yeah, she played
from Killing Eve.
Yes, her.
Yeah, yes. It's Jodie Comer. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a rumor that she was dating a Republican, and hashtag cancel Jodie Comer was trending on Twitter, because there was this rumor. I don't know if it's true or not, that she was dating a Republican. So what? That must mean
that's
that he's
insane.
I mean, how horrible to bully someone for something like that when you don't even know this guy, you don't know anything, you know?
Yeah.
That's not accountability. You're just a bully. You're just someone who is radicalized, but to the left. And you're simply bullying someone. When you want to talk about accountability, separate your emotions from what is going on. Separate yourself from what is going on and realistically think, is this something that is ethical or moral? If it isn't, then we need to hold this person accountable, you know?
Cool. So we obviously discussed a lot.
Yeah.
And
just a little.
And obviously just a little and the wider implications of all this. But I think obviously we've talked about how it is, but when we're kind of tying into the whole inoculation theory of kind of understanding how it works and making people aware of it, so they don't kind of fall victim to it as much in future. Do you have any kind of tips or things to share, any things that you do when faced with a media content in terms of, and how to critically analyze that you can share?
Yeah, so I mean, firstly, I think it's just important to say that there's still definitely a lot more work for me to do as well, just because, you know, I have a background in psychology, or because this is something that interests me, doesn't mean that I don't fall for it still. I definitely do. I think looking at things from different points of view. So for example, if I see a statistic, I want to know how many people were asked. I want to know whether it was nationally representative, if it should be nationally representative. I want to know when it was asked, because if something was asked about, say, mask wearing last March versus now, the opinions are going to be very different. So I might get angry about people saying that they don't want to wear masks back in March, but now more people do. So why am I getting angry? What's the point? But also, I suppose then linking off that, don't get too angry about it. you know, put your emotions to the side. We understand that every single person wants the right information. Every single person. And if it's okay for me to not have a strong opinion about something that I don't know a lot about, I would rather have a neutral opinion about something I know little about than have a strong opinion about something I know little about. there's no rush. You don't need to have an opinion immediately. It's much better for you to learn what you need to learn and then come to your conclusion. You don't need to know straight away, even if you're still trying to figure out, you know, last May what happened with George Floyd and everything. If you're still trying to figure out what you can do, that's good. If you're still trying to figure out your opinions about certain things, how to word it, what to do, good. Like, you don't need to have it all figured out now. I think this is subjective, but I think it's not subjective, actually. I think most people would agree, but it is, listen to science. And I know it's hard because it's sometimes difficult to understand. And I think that the world of scientists, including psychologists, because I know some people are like, psychology isn't a science. Yes, it is. There's my bias again. example A. I know it's hard because, like I said, I think that the scientists in general need to make things more accessible for people who don't have a science background. Because if you limit it to just academia and scientific articles, a bunch of people who don't know how to read them or access them are going to then fall for people who spread disinformation. I think that there's obviously, I mean, that's not a tip, that's just an opinion, but I think try your best to find information that comes from science. Understand that a lot, you know, science is it gets peer reviewed, there are certain controls, and if science does say something, you don't have to immediately agree with what that study says, but take it into account, because there's always going to be a study that says something different. But it's still, as long as it's credible, as long as the methodology is good, as long as it's been peer reviewed, then it's good. And again, don't let it's easy to let the algorithm do the thinking for you, but don't allow it to do that. Always acknowledge that there is an algorithm, and you know, always take everything with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
Those are my tips. And I guess, what are your tips then?
No, absolutely. Very similar. And I think, where do I start? I think when you receive information, yeah, try to take a step back from your emotional response to the headline. And if you need to kind of just reset before you read the article, sure. Second, if you read this article, don't just go scanning for the things that you want to see. And I think in order to do that, you need to be comfortable with being wrong. And yeah, it's difficult. And so, I mean, especially say if it's more publicly, it can be a bit embarrassing, but everybody is in exactly the same position. Nobody knows anything about everything. So I think it kind of fits into that Dunning-Kruger effect that we spoke about the other day, where the less you know about something, the more you think you know about something. Yes. And check your confidence in a particular area. Like, I think be open to people having different perspectives and ideas. And you, like you said, use that to inform, like, to develop your idea. It's continuously developing, it's continuously changing. When new information comes in, then be comfortable enough to change your opinion. You're allowed to do that despite what Twitter and the social media says. And yeah, I think it's more, yeah, definitely being a bit more kind of critical in terms of who wrote this article, what agenda would this person have? And just applying that context to things that you read, both on things that you agree with and also things that you perhaps disagree with. And the last bit I would say is, although this is a bit difficult, and like you said, in terms of there's academia style writing, which is in a way quite exclusive, because people, you're separating the people who have the information and can understand it from the people who are impacted by it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not too difficult to just get like a perhaps basic understanding of kind of research methodology. I know it sounds fucking nerdy and you're like, oh, I can't be asked with this, but it's more, the more you know about it, the less susceptible you would be to a lot of this information and the more kind of critical you can be. And I mean, for instance, working within market research and kind of seeing people's responses to things like polling or that kind of stuff, where they'll give you like a sample of a nationally representative sample of 1,000 people or 2,000 people, and you know that's robust, but people would be like, oh, they didn't ask me, so this can't be legit, or you didn't ask all women about this question, so it can't be legit, or 1,000 people is clearly not enough in order to a claim on this, so it can't be legit. It's more understand, it's get I don't know, just get like a good fundamental understanding of like statistical analysis and just basic things like sample sizes, robustness, and target audiences. Like that will give you a solid foundation in terms of understanding kind of where that goes, because I can go into a lot of kind of examples of that, but I think that once you know how you can lie with statistics, then you're probably going to be less susceptible to it, because what you say may not be incorrect, but it's misleading. So it's just about perhaps kind of taking a step back when you've got the mental energy to do so. But cool. I think we'll just wrap it up there, because I think now I'm ticking over onto like 2.5 hours of content that I need to edit. So, thank you so much for jumping on this and having this conversation. I feel that there's a lot to unpack. I'm trying to like not use all the like the buzzwords from that, like woke people on social media. It's like, we need to have these conversations. But this was really fun. And thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. And yeah, I had a really fun time. Clearly spoke a lot of, since there's two parts. Good luck with editing.
Thank you. All right. Speak to you later.